For any number of reasons, it's sometimes necessary to have a joint replaced. And it seems like knees are close to the top of the list when it comes to that. And there are a lot of factors that can affect how easy and complete your recovery might be. Turns out that the strength of some specific muscles is very important. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. And we're always lucky to have a couple of top-notch physical therapists to answer your questions and to share great information with all of us. And they're here today. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have you back, Lori.
Good to be here.
And Bill Boisenault, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And nice to see you again, Bill.
Good to be back. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you both so much for coming by again. Research is showing that hip and quadricep strength can have a big impact on how well somebody recovers from a total knee replacement. How big a difference does it make? Laurie?
Well, it's interesting because hip and quadricep strength make a big difference in taking care of your knee before your surgery. So having strong hip muscles that stabilize the pelvis when you're walking or getting up from a chair or going up the stairs, as well as quadricep strength that absorbs shock and takes some of the load off of your knee, are critically important for just about any activity you do that requires your lower extremity. So after surgery, there's a big focus on restoring your range of motion, as it should be, and your quadricep strength. And the quadriceps are the big muscles in the front of your thigh. And those are very important, but probably equally important are the muscles around your hip, because they provide the base of support off which your quadriceps muscles can work. So because there's so much attention focused at the knee, that sometimes the hip muscles are overlooked, and they're very important. And research has shown that they've shown improvements in physical function, measures of physical function following joint replacement if you have stronger hip muscles.
And so it speeds recovery, I assume. And
it speeds recovery, speeds return to normal activities. So for people who are not able to return home after their joint replacement, or they have to go to an intermediate care facility, it may mean that they can get out of that care facility sooner. If they're discharged directly home, it may mean that they can get out sooner. They may be getting home health services initially, so they can move away from home health services to outpatient therapy, and they can just get out and do shopping, do their socializing, and the things that they like to do.
Yeah. And I would guess, Bill, that, and we've talked about this sort of in the past shows, that if you prepare well before the surgery, it's going to be very helpful.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference from a couple different perspectives. Some people are in so much pain, they really can't do much exercise before surgery, and so that limits. But there are people who can exercise, and the stronger they can get before the surgery, then you're dealing with less of a deficit postoperatively. And just knowing what to expect can make a big difference. It's really, as Lori described, two phases to recovery. First, you have to recover from the surgery itself, and it's a major surgery. Mm-hmm. So there's swelling and there's soreness from the procedure itself, and the goal is really you have to get your range of motion back. And then it's recovery of function. There are some people who recover from surgery fine, but they never get their function back. And then is that really a success or not? And so to get the function back, that's where strengthening of, you know, elsewhere besides just the knee, I think that has been a shift in focus over the last 5 or 10 years. And there's better results with that.
Yeah. I remember my father-in-law's had his surgery, and prior to it, he followed the instructions to the letter.
Good for him. The
time before the surgery, in terms of strengthening and making sure it was good and strong, and then afterwards, he did exactly as he was told, and was complimented many times
It makes everybody's job a lot easier.
It does.
It
does. Yeah. And those instructions are important. It's very important if you are going to have a joint replacement that you go in ahead of time and learn the exercises and things that you're going to be having to do afterwards. And if you're able to start doing them before your surgery, that way you have practice at them. You know what they're supposed to feel like. Because after surgery, as Bill said, you have this recovery phase after surgery where everything hurts and it may hurt to do the exercise. And you say, well, is it supposed to? Is it not supposed to? And you'll at least have some experience with doing the exercise.
Yeah. And people, too, they do a preoperative visit, going back to your question before, with the surgeon, anesthesiologist, and physical therapy is not always included in that preoperative visit. But it's really helpful. We teach people how they're going to have to get in and out of bed, up and down from the toilet, you know, using a walker to start with typically, besides the exercise they're going to do early on. And so, like Lori said, if you can do that kind of teaching once before the procedure, it makes things a ton easier afterward.
And so the kinds of things that they would learn are, I suppose it depends on how serious the problem is in terms of what you do ahead of time, terms of exercise or whatever to get ready.
There's pretty standard stuff, pretty standard strengthening exercises. So showing them how to stretch their knee, you know, bending and straightening their knee. Here's how you bend it. Here's how you tighten your quadriceps muscles. That's a really important one because after surgery, your knee hurts. And sometimes people actually forget how to fire their muscles. It's kind of a muscle memory thing. So the more you do it ahead of time, the easier it is to remember how to do it afterwards. And then that usually includes hip strengthening exercises. And, you know, for people who have arthritis in their knee bad enough to undergo a knee replacement, chances are they probably have some wear and tear elsewhere. And so learning how to do the exercises properly so they don't hurt their back, don't hurt their hip, or cause a secondary problem is really important. So teaching them those strengthening exercises, you know, from a physical therapist saying, you know, here you need to hold your pelvis, you're arching your back too much, you're lifting your leg too far, things like that. So they learn to do them correctly will help them tremendously afterwards.
Because that's what they'll be doing afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And how long is the usual recovery period?
Well, it depends upon how you define recovery. So recovery to function, you know, getting out and getting around in your community, being able to return to some of your normal activities, you know, you're talking 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
But really recovering can take easily a year.
Yeah. Oh. And again, part of it goes back to how debilitated were they before the surgery in terms of what's their endurance and what's their balance and strength beforehand. Again, it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, people recover from the surgery itself probably in 2 to 4 weeks. Most of the surgical soreness is gone. A lot of the swelling is gone. And hopefully they've gotten a pretty good chunk of the range of motion back. But then that second phase can take time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not something you just think, oh, I'm just going to get my knee replaced and glibly go doing it.
Well, it sounds easy. And you look at pictures and you think, well, that would be pretty easy to do and recover. But it's a major procedure.
Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenald, our physical therapist, with us today. And I give the number here. Call in if you have a question or comment about what we've been talking about, physical therapy after something like knee replacement. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you may have another issue that doesn't relate at all to that, and you're certainly welcome to join in with those questions as well. Again, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post your questions or your comments there. Wondering what kinds of injuries are you guys seeing these days? Anything, is it typical for the time of the year?
I'm seeing ankles.
Ankles.
Soccer and football have started. And so we're seeing ankle injuries, contusions, things as a result of falls. So those kinds of things.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of the high school soccer tryouts were last week. And
sure.
So they're pretty intense.
With that, right? Yeah, the fall sports are really kicking in.
Yeah. Pardon the pun.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Soccer or football either. Yeah. And I think I've seen a few people, just the we've had summer now for enough months that they've been running enough or swimming enough. They developed some overuse problems with their shoulders
some
or
swimming
knees as well. And but it's a that's kind of what we
this
see
is
this time
typical,
of the year.
Typical yes, what you're going to see this time of year.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Well, we have lots of people calling in here. The number again, that number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or again, post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Joan in New Berlin first here. Joan, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. I have a question concerning specific exercises to do for hip strengthening. I'm 5 years ago, I had my right knee replaced, and I'm basically facing it in the left knee. I'm very active. I'm 63, and I do a lot of biking with a recumbent. But in the last 6 months, I've developed quite a lot of pain in kind of the sciatic type of area, and which is interfering. I've also noticed that I'm having more difficulty going up and down stairs normally. I can't really go downstairs normally with that. And I have periodically had some problems with that right knee as far as flexibility just for rotating the kneecap. And I've had physical therapy. But I, from what you're describing, it almost fits me to a T that I'm having some issues in that area. And I've done the clams. I've done the bridge, you know, where you tilt back. Is there anything else that you can suggest to help me strengthen the hip area? My quads are pretty good, but I'm really having trouble with the hip.
Okay. So, Joan, I just want to clarify the hip as opposed to the sciatic pain. What's interfering most right now with you?
It's actually in the top, you know, the bottom of where the leg towards the back, where the leg meets the your butt, your derriere, right there. And I don't have any back pain. I have a very strong back. I've never had a backache actually ever.
Okay.
And so that's never affected. But I'm having issue. It's affecting even when I'm walking, and especially when I'm biking. It's really getting to be an issue if I'm going more than over 5-6 miles.
Okay.
I'm really starting to.
And so, does the pain go down in your leg then, or does it stay up in that buttock area?
No, it stays up in that area.
Okay, all right.
And
well, there are lots of. There's lots of strengthening exercises. What you describe are the basic ones that people generally start at, but then they should be progressed. You know, there should be a schedule of, or you being taught of knowing when to do the next level of strengthening exercises, because the same one over and over again, at some point you're going to max out on getting any benefit. And so were you given a progression of what to do when those got easy for you?
No, they were initially addressing the difficulty that I have. I've lost some flexibility in the knee, and which they were addressing, trying to help me go down the stairs more normally again.
Right.
To go one after the other, and as we were working on that, this became I had indicated to them that I was having some difficulty. In the wintertime, I do a stationary recumbent, and then I'm out biking quite heavily the rest of the year. You know, the bike goes away only when the snow flies. Otherwise, it's...
Right,
right.
Right. Well, it sounds like if you've not gone in a while to be reevaluated and for them to not look at your knee but look at your hip in terms of range of motion and strengthening and also your core... But at some point, people are ready to advance beyond the clamshell strengthening exercises and the bridging. And there's lots of things to do beyond that for strengthening and balance and as well as endurance.
You know, you might also think about your bike and your bike seat, because when you sit on a recumbent, you know, you're sitting right on, you know, your tailbone and your ischium, right at the attachment of some of those muscles and right on your sciatic nerve. Plus, in contrast to an upright where your leg is pretty straight underneath you, your sciatic nerve is really in quite a bit of stretch. So there might be something about your positioning on your bike that needs to change in order to take the pressure off your sciatic nerve.
That's a good point. So that's something to bring up with
your bike people.
Yeah.
Or even the PT. There are some PTs that are certified bike fitters.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I had thought about the next round, if it was still decent weather, to actually bike to physical therapy and then have them look at it.
That's a great idea.
That's actually a great
excellent idea.
Yeah.
Yep.
Do that, Joan, and good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, physical therapist Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody with us to help with your aches and pains and sprains and strains. Great to have them along. Thank you so much for listening in. Lots of callers online. So we are going to turn next to Pat in Milwaukee. Aloha, Pat.
Aloha, Larry, and welcome to your guest. I just wanted to put in a plug for the importance of aquatic exercise in a warm water pool as an alternative to land exercise. When I had my second knee surgery, between the first and second, during that 1 year of recovery, as soon as I was well enough, I got into the pool, and with the Arthritis Foundation certified instructor, I spent 6 weeks in a 6 hours per week in a 4 day period exercising in the pool. And I came home able to walk from the hospital, came directly home able to walk around the house with very minimal support.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Absolutely agree with that. I mean, a warm water pool is a great place to exercise. I mean, the fact that she was able to do 6 hours of exercise, you know, you kind of go back and say, well, is it the quantity of exercise she did that made it work, or was it the warm water pool? It's probably an intersection of them both, in that you probably couldn't do that quantity of exercise on land because of the issues of weight bearing and gravity and pain, but you can in the pool. And it gives you, you know, support. It gives you buoyant support to take the weight off your joints, but it gives you resistance to your movement for strengthening and range of motion. So I concur wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Thank you, Pat.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate the call. Pat was another one of our Hawaii trip folks that we had a lot of fun this last spring.
How can you not have fun in Hawaii?
It was pretty tough.
I mean, really,
we
Larry.
We should do a show from Hawaii. So.
Oh, yeah,
that's right. When do we get to go?
It was really hard work, I tell you. Oh, when can I go again? Lisa in Pewaukee, your turn. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a possible half knee as opposed to a full knee operation in my future, hopefully distant future. 5 years ago, developed some pain. About 4 years ago, was diagnosed with having no arthritis or no cartilage on one side of my knee. I wear a leg brace that works very, very well, and I am highly active. I work for a major shipping company and do easily 20,000-30,000 steps in a day. So I need to know how to have a lot of confidence in the doctor that I'm working with when he wants to make that decision for a half knee. Right now, I can only pay for that surgery once and be off of work for a year once. And so I don't want to have to get a half and go back for a whole. So can you tell me some of the differences within this and how I would help that doctor with that decision?
Well, it's a little bit difficult to project in the future what you're going to need. So, you know, sure. In general, you really only want to get what you need, because as good as a joint replacement is, it's not as good as your own joint surfaces. They've not been able to replicate those to date. So you really only want to do as much as you have to. So the first question is, why did half of your knee deteriorate and the other half didn't? So that's important information. So, for example, we'd want to know, did you have an acute injury where you tore a meniscus on that side of the knee? Or does it have to do with... Okay, do you know?
I'm guessing it's either something within work, because it's a very repetitive job.
Right.
Or it more likely has to do with a genetic component.
All right. But you inherited the same articular cartilage on both the inside and the outside of your knee. So when you talk about a half, you're talking about medial or lateral. So sometimes if you have, if you're very bowed-legged or very knock-kneed, then you'll wear out one side of your joint and not the other. So do you have a malalignment at your knee?
If there is, I do not have the skilled eye to be able to see
that. Okay. Well, yeah, if it's not obvious to you, then you probably don't. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would say that you really need to wait until the time comes when you say, I need to have this done, and look at the quality of the joint surface that remains on the sort of uninvolved side. And if it's going to deteriorate like the other side did, then you probably just as well get the whole thing done. If that articular surface on the other side is in good shape, then you want to preserve it. So yeah. I think that's really your bottom line. And if you're not confident in your doctor, get a second opinion.
Yeah.
Sure. I know I've been to a couple of doctors. The last one that I went to was or could be a likely candidate to do both. And he at the time, especially knowing what I do for a job, had said, I'll see you in 2 years. Well, it's been four. Mm-hmm. And really, I'm very fortunate. As long as I wear the brace, I can do great through the day. I don't take any painkillers, and I'm doing well.
Good for you.
Good
for you.
And as of right now, listening to what you've been saying about muscles, and, you know, I'm doing steps, I'm doing walking, I'm doing the whole gamut because it's a full range of things that do for work.
Right.
So that's encouraging to hear about the exercising thing, too.
Yep, and just make sure you're wearing shoes with good shock absorptive insoles, because that's been shown, particularly if you're walking on cement, to reduce the joint loads.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Good luck, Lisa.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Heidi in Wanakee, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Heidi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And help Bill and Lori with your excellent advice. The question I have is, I have surgery scheduled for September 9th for a double laminectomy. And I've been through everything. So I'm at the point now where I'm saying, all right, let's just do surgery. Let's open up the area that is pinching on nerves and giving me the incredible pain that I have. And other than trying to work on strengthening my core, I'm wondering if you have any idea what the rehab might be afterwards.
Okay. And maybe first talk about what is a laminectomy, Bill, if you want to.
You bet. And how do you describe the reason it's typically done? There are changes that can occur within the spine, like the knee and the hip, that can decrease the space available for the nerves.
Okay.
And oftentimes it can either be a herniated disc, more an acute injury, or more often than not, it's more arthritic changes that can occur. And once there's pressure in a nerve, you start getting leg pain and numbness and potentially weakness. So the operation is they remove part of the vertebra that forms the roof over where the nerves are, and just opens up space for the nerves and takes pressure off of them. So it's really designed to eliminate and take care of the leg symptoms. And Heidi, the fact it's two levels doesn't mean you can't recover, but it'll take you a little longer than someone who just has one level. But they'll have you wearing a brace for comfort early on for the first few days, maybe first few weeks, and you'll be walking. That will be your primary activity. But kind of like our discussion with the total knee replacement, there's two phases. You need to recover from the surgery itself, which will take a few weeks, 2 to 4 weeks, for you to get over that kind of soreness, and then recovery of function again. And hip flexibility is going to be really important for you. The more you can bend at your hips, the less pressure falls on your back, and then the hip and core strengthening together. So, you know, whatever you can do of those now in light of your pain will set you up for a quicker recovery. But in most cases that I've seen, they usually start physical therapy maybe 4 to 6 weeks after the surgery. That's typically when you go back for your first follow-up visit with the surgeon, is 4 to 6 weeks afterward. And then that's the time to talk about the longer-term physical therapy care.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Do you know I can ask this more when I have my pre-op exam, but I was just wondering how self-sufficient I need to be if I don't have, I have a few days of care, but then I won't have any care will I be able to get up and feed myself and do that type of thing?
Most likely. But those are the things that they'll make sure. This, again, talking to the surgeon at your pre-op visit will be really helpful. They should have some indication of how much work they're going to have to do once they get inside. But that's also what they're going to work with you in the hospital. They will make sure that you can do things safely. And if not, then help find you the appropriate care.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're active now and you're taking care of yourself at this point in time, you should get back to that fairly quickly after the surgery.
Uh-huh. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Heidi. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way, as we visit with our physical therapist, Bill Boisenault, and Laurie Tyne Brody from the University of Wisconsin. Great to have them along. And the number for you to join us is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Andy in Cudahy up next with a question. Andy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. A 63-year-old in April, I was biking up a steep hill, and I put a lot of pressure on my legs, and I felt a pull in my inner groin area. So I assume I have a groin pull.
Yeah.
It has not done anything about it, don't really take medication for it, but it seems to be not healing at all. So I'm just wondering, is physical therapy something that would be of help to me at this point? And if you look online, they seem to always try to sell you a system of pain relievers, heat, and then type of bracing or wrapping of the inner thigh. Does that help any?
Probably not. How long ago was this, Andy?
This is in April.
Oh, April. Wow.
I never had any swelling, no bleeding, huh. No nothing like that. So it would be, you know, a minor groin pill.
Did you bike all summer?
I've been biking now. It does not hurt to bike.
Hurts when you walk. Okay.
And it seems like lately it's kind of spreading toward the outside of the hip and down the quadriceps.
Okay. Yeah, it's time to get that looked at.
Okay.
Yeah, so, a groin pull, your garden variety strain of the muscles honestly should recover pretty well, you know, unless you're a linebacker or a tennis player. You're doing a lot of starting, stopping, cutting.
No, nothing like that.
Things like that. There are a number of other things that can go wrong in that area. You could have a symphysis pubis issue. You could have a hip joint issue. When you push down, you could have injured something in your hip joint itself. And most often, primary hip problems will manifest as groin pain. So the fact that it's spreading, it's been several months and it's not better, you need to go in and have that looked at and find out if it indeed is just a muscle or if it's coming from someplace else. And again, the chief suspects would be your hip joint itself, pelvis, low back.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. You betcha.
Thank you, doctor.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Lois in Shell Lake. Hi to you.
Well, thank you, Larry, for taking my call.
Sure.
WPR's phone number is in my personal directory.
That's wonderful.
I had an infected artificial shoulder joint removed 1 year ago. I have no pain in that arm at all, but I have a drastic loss of muscle control, and I can hardly lift anything. I'm wondering if I'm a candidate for physical therapy, or do the experts have any suggestions for me as to how to get that arm back in a little better motion?
So, Lois, have you seen a physical therapist in the last 3-6 months?
No.
Okay. All right. It's time to see one. Between the surgery and then the infection, that will dictate the type of strengthening that can be done and what's a reasonable goal at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
But a physical therapist in their evaluation should be able to give you that direction. And there has to be things that you can do to start regaining some strength in that arm.
Okay.
So it's time to see a physical therapist. They'll examine you, and then they can set up an individual program for you in terms of not only strengthening but also range of motion as well.
Okay. So would I go just to a physical therapist without a referral from a doctor or an orthopedic doctor, or how do I do that?
You know, you can call a clinic that either you've been to in the past and have liked, or one that is close to you. Tell them what your insurer is. Most insurances will pay for physical therapy without a doctor's referral, but you can ask the clinic and they will tell you if you need a referral or not.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you, because I can see myself going downhill, and I do not like it.
No.
We need both shoulders working. So
absolutely.
Good you called.
Very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Lois, for calling. And Fred in Algoma, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Got a knee issue. Just recently, I had an MRI done saying that I had a slight tear in the meniscus and a slight tear in the ACL. Wondering if that can be rehabbed or if that's definite surgery.
Well, a couple questions, Fred. First of all, how old are you?
43.
Okay, and your activity level? You're pretty active.
Yes, active.
Okay.
Active.
Are you active in things like running, biking, swimming, or things like tennis, and so on?
Golf.
I guess it's more work-related.
Okay.
I do have an active life, but more work-related activities.
Okay. The reason I ask is, well, first of all, did you have an acute injury, I presume, where you tore your ACL?
We'll just say I had a fall.
Okay.
And that's when it happened.
Okay. All right. Because if you had torn your ACL 20 years ago and you just discovered it now, then that would tell me that you've been doing pretty well without surgery and you probably wouldn't go in and do anything at this point in time. If your ACL is partially intact, I would not have surgery. I'd leave it alone and see how you do. If the meniscus is not giving you symptoms, then it's fine to leave it as is. If your meniscus is giving you symptoms such as catching, locking, you're getting repetitive swelling, things like that, then you may need to have something done about the meniscus tear. But it depends upon the location of the meniscus tear, the direction of the meniscus tear, and what kind of load you put on it. Thus, the questions about your activity level. So if you're doing things that are straightforward, or straight sideways that are controlled, as in carrying loads or things like that on even surfaces, you're probably okay. For people who are on uneven surfaces, or for example, if you were climbing around on a roof with heavy objects, then I'd say it's a little bit dicier, because if your knee gave out, the consequences of that are more significant than if you were walking down the street as part of your job. So it's really an interplay between your activity level and the demands on your knee, safety issues, and things like that. Mm-hmm. So in general, my advice would be leave the ACL alone, leave the meniscus alone, unless you're symptomatic. Then mm-hmm. if you're symptomatic, you need to have a conversation with your physician about what makes the most sense.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Since I had, you know, everything was determined. You know, I have minimal pain. I have tightness, like, in the back of my knee, probably mm-hmm. where the ACL is. It's tight, but, you know, I'm dealing with it.
So when you say it's tight, does that mean you have swelling in there?
I guess it just feels tight.
Okay. Can you bend and straighten your knee fully?
Yes. Laying in bed is an issue. I can't quite get it all the way straight.
Okay, so that is an issue, because if you are unable to fully straighten your knee, the knee can deteriorate fairly rapidly because it doesn't allow for the normal joint mechanics during walking and most normal movements that we make. Oh. One of the most important things, and we talked about knee replacements and range of motion, one of the most important things for function is that you can straighten your knee fully and easily, because then all of your movement patterns are normal. If you walk with a slightly flexed knee, it changes the mechanics completely and you will experience a more rapid degeneration of your knee. So if you have something that's blocking your knee, as in that meniscus tear, or something inside your knee that is blocking full extension, then you need to have something done about that. Or I would advise you to have something done about it.
There you go. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. Thanks very much.
Yeah, maybe check in with your doctor again and get a little more advice from her or him about that.
Nancy in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi, Nance.
Well, good morning. My husband's a retired construction worker, and quite a few years ago, he had both of his knees replaced at the same time. 2 weeks later, he was climbing the ladders, taking the leaves out of the eave trough. And, well, then he had both of his shoulders redone. And but then, gosh darn it, along comes, he had some pain by his hip. So they went to the doctor. It hurts so gosh darn bad. So they did an x-ray. Nothing's wrong. Doc says, well, just put ice on and heat. And, well, he tried that for a while. There was a lump on the hip bone, right above the hip on the right side. And I could feel it was like taking a lemon and cutting it in half lengthwise. And that's, I could feel that tissue there. So anyway, he gave him some prescription for pain pills, and he won't take them. He says, they make you loopy. And so then the doctor says, or the chiropractor says, ice and heat, ice and heat. Well, so now he's been told, just keep put the heat on. But it hurts so bad. I mean, honest to gosh, with the knees and the shoulders, that didn't give him nowhere near the pain that he's got with this muscle here on his hip. What should he do, and why should he have this?
So, Nancy, has his medical doctor felt or seen this lump?
Yeah, well, he felt it. You can feel it.
Okay.
I mean, you could feel it, but now it's relaxed a lot. You can't feel it, a lump like it was.
Okay.
It's in the muscle, and but it still is very, very painful.
Yeah.
Okay.
He can handle a lot of pain, but by golly, this is not good.
Yeah, well, you reach a point where heat and ice is only going to take you so far, and you know it could. It could be a partial tear, it could be a complete tear. You know, strength testing would give you some indication of what degree of injury has occurred in the muscle and which muscles. And so, there are some techniques that you can do to help muscles recover and to heal, and to really work on strengthening around that muscle. Has he seen a physical therapist since this started?
No, he hasn't.
Okay.
He hasn't. He's just on a chiropractor and a physician.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, if he's looking for just another opinion or another set of eyes, a physical therapist, an orthopedic physical therapist, would be a good person for him to consider seeing. And again, they'll do a variety of strength tests and functional tests to try to figure out, you know, which muscle or muscles, and then how to approach the rehabilitation for him. But it would be important to do that because I'm sure it's altering how he stands and how he walks, which puts more pressures on his knees. So I understand why you're calling, but I think maybe another set of eyes could be a good thing.
Okay, well, he's cut grass and he's rototilling and all that stuff, which he probably shouldn't be doing, but you can't tell him, you know.
No, we understand. Well, activity's good in most cases, but, and I'm sure he's getting good advice from his chiropractor and physician as well. But, you know, if that hip is not changing enough, there comes a time where just, you know, another opinion may come up with an idea that hasn't been considered yet.
And good luck. Thanks a lot, Nancy, for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne-Brody. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne-Brody, taking a look at physical therapy issues today, dealing with all those aches and pains and sprains and strains. Questions for them? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. Josh in Madison has a question, so let's go to him. Josh, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick question. I was recently diagnosed with a torn labrum, and my orthopedist is recommending that I give physical therapy a shot. However, I read online that the success rate of physical therapy with this type of injury isn't real great. So I'm wondering what your physical therapists think about that, and I'm wondering if I'm wasting my time by going that route and if I should be considering surgery.
Okay.
Torn labrum where? Because you have labrums in more than one spot in your body.
Shoulder, okay.
And what is, and the labrum does
well, the labrum is essentially the corollary to the meniscus in the knee.
Oh,
it deepens the socket. So just for a couple things, Josh, how did you tear your labrum, and do you know what part of your labrum is torn?
It was a fall, and it's an old injury. It's just been acting up and bothering me. I've had the issue for about 7 years, and I was camping, and they think it was a partial dislocation that worked itself out on my travels back home. And it's deep in the socket. I don't know much more than that. I had an MRI done on it not too long ago, but from what I understand, it's...
So you had a dislocation?
I did, yes.
Okay. Did they say if it was a Bankart lesion? Does that sound familiar?
No, I haven't heard that term.
All right. Okay, so you have labrums in your hip. It's kind of like the meniscus of the knee. It deepens the socket, and particularly in the shoulder, where the joint itself is pretty much like a golf ball sitting on a tee. You have your glenoid is a very shallow fossa, so it doesn't fit very well. So the labrum deepens the socket, and it's a cartilage material. And you can tear your labrum in different places. So, for example, I asked him about the Bankart lesion. If you dislocate your shoulder, you will generally tear the labrum on the bottom side of your shoulder underneath the ball, and that's called a Bankart lesion. And it generally doesn't repair itself, which is why if you're young and active, you tend to have recurrent dislocations because you've lost some stability. And really, you do need surgical fixation for that. Then there are other types of labral tears that happen on top of your shoulder. For example, pitchers get labral tears on top of their shoulder where their biceps tendon passes close to the labrum, and through repetitive pitching and throwing a ball, they will tear the labrum on top of their shoulder. And that's a different kind of issue. So the bottom line, Josh, is I can't really say if it's going to be successful or not, because it depends upon the location of your labral tear and the type of tear it is and what other tissues it's associated with. But this I can say, and that is rehabilitation can take you fairly far. And if this was an old injury and you were not symptomatic until you had this fall recently while camping, then surgery may be overly aggressive. And so the smartest first step would see how far can you get with rehabilitation, with strengthening exercises. Know what doesn't change the labral tear, but the labral tear was there before. So see how far you can get with some structured exercises for your shoulder. And if you're still not happy with where you're at, then you're in better shape for the surgical procedure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and Josh. And Josh, they'll look at your neck and your back as well. When we are using our arms, we not only use our shoulder, but we use our trunk in terms of flexibility, reaching for things, carrying things. So they'll look at your thoracic spine, your rib cage, and look for other areas that may be contributing to what you can't do with that shoulder to take pressure off that labrum. So they'll take a close look at your shoulder, but they'll look beyond your shoulder to try to help you get through this.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Sawyer in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, me and my brother play baseball, and we both have arm pain on our throwing arm, and we're wondering if there's any prevention for that.
Oh, Sawyer, how old are you and your brother?
I'm 13, and he's 16.
All right, okay. Awesome. So are you playing Little League, or are you playing middle school?
Little League.
Okay. Well, a couple things. A, Little League has rules in place about how many pitches you can pitch in a game.
Yeah.
So that's one thing, is to make sure that your coach is following those rules. However, those rules... What?
No, keep going.
Okay. But the problem is those rules don't extend to what happens at home when you're not actually on the Little League field. So some of it has to do with dosing and making sure that you're not throwing too much, because both of you have growing arms. So spending your time doing quality throwing, but not a lot of volume. And then that is followed with some specific strengthening exercises for your shoulder, your upper back, your elbow, wrist, and hand to help keep the muscles in the area strong. So absolutely prevention. And if you, you know, a physical therapist who's a sports physical therapist could meet with you and your brother one or two times and give you a specific exercise program for throwers. There's a group of exercises called the Throwers 10 that they might be able to give you that just use elastic bands and some free weights. That are good, but the big key is to watch how many times you throw a ball.
Mm. Yeah.
Good.
All right, there you go.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Sawyer. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for calling in. Appreciate your call.
It's a really important issue. I mean, to be 13 and having arm pain already, you know, that's an overuse sign. You can develop a number of problems. For example, in kids, you can develop humeral fractures in the proximal part of your humerus, and you can develop growth plate issues around the elbow. And if you get too much stretching because of the stress that comes on the inside of the elbow, you can damage those ligaments on the inside of your elbow and eventually damage the nerve there that passes on the inside of your elbow if you get enough traction injury there. So those rules are in place for a reason. Yeah. So I'm really glad that Sawyer called.
And Lori's right. The pitch count, they're talking about during the game itself, but people throw between games and throw a lot between games, whether it's at home or, you know, with some of the other teammates.
Mm-hmm.
So often they just don't get enough rest.
Yeah.
I was very, really interested to see that there's a girl pitching this year in the Little League in the World Series.
Pitching very well.
Mm-hmm. And pitching very well. And typically the mechanics of a woman, of a girl or a woman throwing are different, are they not, from the mechanics of a boy, at least that's what I've heard. Or is that not
probably
true?
Not at that age yet.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Once you pass puberty and you start getting changes in upper body versus lower body strength and centers of gravity, then things change. But really, prior to puberty, they're pretty comparable.
Pretty comparable.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a good example, though. Yeah. She seems to be an exception, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was first girl to drive in a run as well. She hit and drove in a run.
Excellent.
And won her game that she pitched. Audrey in Wisconsin Rapids, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Thank you. My husband had surgery on his ankle in May, and it fused. And he's still off in work. He just got off the scooter thing where he's able to stand now probably 3 weeks ago. But he's really struggling. His foot is, in the evening, he has to ice it and stuff like that because it's hurting. Is this one of the things where you said maybe in a year it'll be different? Or?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So Audrey, what does the surgeon say about his status and the pain with
Well, he was saying that because he's a heavy smoker and stuff like that, he's not healing as fast as he should be.
Okay.
And what was the reason for the fusion?
He broke it when he was in college about 30 years ago.
Oh, so he had some bad arthritis in there?
Yeah.
Well, the... You know, anytime you fuse a joint, that means if you want to have normal movement, then the joints adjacent to it have to compensate. Chances are if he had a trauma bad enough to break his ankle that, you know, his foot and adjacent joints are probably not in great shape either. Yeah, I would have to follow the surgeon's guidelines, and he's probably correct that anytime you're a smoker and you try to get a bone to fuse, it's going to be difficult. Many surgeons won't fuse joints, particularly in the spine, in people who are currently smoking for that specific reason. And additionally, smoking affects your other connective tissues, your muscle, tendon, ligaments, articular cartilage, also making it difficult for them to heal. So he may do well to get in a pool where he can start to exercise in a limited weight-bearing environment. So that might be a useful strategy to help get him moving. Yeah. His physician is right.
So, Audrey, has he seen a physical therapist yet?
No, and the doctor said that he probably won't because it's not like he's going to get any range of motion in his ankle.
Right. Well, it's true because it's fused, but a physical therapist can help in terms of pain and working the joints around the area that's fused. As Lori mentioned, other joints are going to be asked to do more because of the procedure itself. So sometimes there's things you can do at the midfoot, making sure the big toe has adequate range of motion, and up in the knee, and strengthening. There's things that I think a physical therapist can help with from a functional standpoint. And if it's safe for him to start putting weight on the foot, then it's safe for him to start doing some exercises as well. And probably some scar, some massage that the physical therapist can do along the scar can help from a comfort standpoint big time. Looking beyond the fused site from rehab would be worthwhile.
And he's mentioning that his knee and his hip are bothering, but he's walking with that boot, and I'm thinking that's probably tilting him too.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. So one of the things a physical therapist would do would look at him in that boot and make some suggestions about what to do with his other shoe to normalize that, because he will start to develop problems elsewhere. So, you know, I'd say, Audrey, if your husband was sailing through this procedure and doing great and back to work, that's fine. But he has a number of barriers and risk factors that I think he would benefit from being seen by physical therapy and getting some help with.
Okay.
And typically that it's maybe one or two visits sometimes, as I've heard you say.
Well, especially to know, does PT have a role or not? You should tell that within a visit or two. And if the answer is yes, there is a role, then there would be more visits over a time frame. But we can usually tell within a visit or two, do we have, like I said, something to add or offer?
Mm-hmm. There we go. We thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We're talking today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist. Bill with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And they'll be with us right up till 12:30. News next, then we'll be back with Lori and Bill. Well, whether it's an old injury that you just can't seem to fully recover from, or maybe it's a new twinge that's made an appearance, oh, man, it's tough sometimes to deal with those aches and pains, isn't it? And it's hard to know just what to do, whether it's just an annoyance or whether you're going to have something more, you know, substantial done. Larry Mueller here. Well, we have Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault with us to answer those questions. Bill's the senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. And Bill, always a pleasure.
Great to be back, Larry. Thank you.
And Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Lori, thank you.
Excellent to be here. Beautiful day.
Beautiful day to have you with us. And certainly there is no shortage of callers with questions. And so I think we'll go right to the phones. Let me give you the number. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org with a question, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. But let's turn to the phones first here, and Dan in Muskego. Dan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. On May 2nd, I tore my ACL and my meniscus playing basketball. And my question is it more difficult in the surgery the longer I wait for surgery if I decide to do it?
Okay. Good question. A couple questions. First of all, may I ask your age?
56.
Okay. And obviously you're pretty active. You play basketball.
I played last night.
Okay. Well, that's key information. So you played last night. It's not giving you symptoms?
I'm slower. I cannot bend my knee completely, but I can straighten it.
Okay. All right. Are you getting swelling, catching, locking, things like that?
None of those.
Okay, good. And does your work require a high demand on your knee?
It does not.
Okay. Well, then you're probably, let me back up. There's probably no harm in waiting, particularly if you're able to play basketball without symptoms. So, you know, generally there are a third of people that need surgery, you know, not right away, not in the first week, but, you know, imminently within the first couple months, about a third of people. There are a third of people who do pretty well by cutting back on their activities and kind of watching things. And then there's a third of people who really do just fine with no surgery, no intervention at all. So you're probably somewhere in that two-thirds where you've modified a little bit, you have an excuse for being a little bit slower, things like that. So there's really probably there's no harm in waiting if you're not symptomatic. So what I would do, though, is make sure that I stayed strong with some resistive exercises, quads, hamstrings, hip muscles. Are you wearing any kind of a brace or a sleeve on your knee?
An elastic brace, yeah.
An elastic brace, that's just fine. So something like that to give you some position sense. And, you know, just being a little bit careful. If your knee starts talking to you, then it might be time to have something done. What did your surgeon say?
Just that it is up to me, and that I did tear my ACL and my meniscus. It's curious, and the reason why I ask it, my general physician told me that the longer I wait, it makes the surgery more difficult because the tendons start pulling apart or start curling. And my surgeon said, no, that's not true.
I would agree with your surgeon.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, the ACL, once it's torn, will not heal. It's not a ligament that heals. It's not like a tendon where if you tear the tendon, it'll retract and you can no longer reattach it. That's not true of the ACL.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. Thank you, Lauren.
Yep. Good luck.
Appreciate the call. And David and Wausau, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey. Lori, I got to get all these L names straight. Lori, Larry, and Bill.
Yeah.
thanks for the great show. First of all, I'm going to invite you guys to give me and the listeners a little primer on shin splints, but let me give you my background. I'm 61 years old. I've been very athletic all my life. I quit running a few years ago because I got a couple of plates in an ankle and a knee, much like the one described by the previous caller. I don't run hardwood floor anymore. I don't do anything really impact. I bicycle, etc. But I got a job, a part-time job, and I'm on a cement floor. And I may have waited about a week too long to go get good shoes. So I'm on this cement floor for about 5 hours a day, and I got a shin splint in my right leg like you would not believe. And, you know, I'm 61 years old and not expecting to get anything like that. That's a 15-year-old thing, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I fortunately have a sister-in-law who's an excellent physical therapist here in Wausau, and she did some kinesio taping on it and took me completely out of symptom. I mean, it was like miraculous, a miracle of empirical know-how, if you will. But my question is, in addition to just giving you guys a chance to inform people about this and that it does happen to old farts like myself, how long do I keep the tape on? You know, should I have it retaped? What do I do once I've let that tendon go and the tape is gone? How soon can I resume normal activities?
Well, let's back up a little bit. So
sure.
You have the plates. Is this the same leg that you have the plates and the bad knee?
No, this is on my good leg.
This is on your good leg. Okay.
The plates and the bad knee are on the left leg, and this is the leg, which, of course, I know I favor the other leg. That's only natural. But,
right. And where in your shin does it hurt?
It's about 4 inches above the ankle.
On the inside, outside?
Right at the apex of the tibia, on the front.
On the front.
Right at the sharp part of the tibia. And when I flex my foot forward and backward, my toes up and down,
yep,
and I have my fingers on that tendon,
yep,
it feels gritty.
Okay. So
I
you can
feel vibration with my fingers.
Huh. Did your sister do a vibration test with a tuning fork?
Not that I was aware of.
You would have known.
I asked her to feel that vibration that I felt, and she picked up on it right away, and she said, let me get my tape, and I try and isolate that. And
okay.
I mean, it was hell, and she took me completely out of symptom. I'm walking normally today.
Okay.
But I know once I take the tape off, that's my question, you know, what do I do then?
All right, so really you're down to a question of dosage. So you've taped it, which is kind of like using an assistive device, a crutch, a cane, a tape, a brace, a something to offload the tendon. So so now the question is, how do you get back to previous activity? Well, we need to strengthen the muscle that has been irritated. So typically you would get some strengthening, some stretching exercises. You would use some icing, and you would continue to use the tape while you're at work and on your feet, and then hopefully take it off when you come home and do your icing, stretching, strengthening exercises. If it's still painful, when you come home, you take the tape off and you go, ah, then you may need to leave the tape on longer and gradually work your way out of it as your symptoms resolve. So if the tape is effectively offloading that tendon, the tendon should start to recover. And then as it's recovering, you're working on strengthening it and so on. And then you would gradually decrease the taping.
So I guess what I hear you saying is maybe don't work it too much, as far as I know I need to stretch my calf and ice. I've been doing all that, getting it up when I'm home. But while it's taped, maybe not overdo that. Wait till the tape is off and I feel better before I start working it.
Yes.
Too hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's really hard to get people better when they're still in the situation that caused it. So if you're still working and walking on cement for 5 hours, it's going to be real hard to get that better. So it's going to take some time. It's going to take longer to get it better.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Physical therapists are amazing, because what she did to relieve my symptoms was just amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, the other thing that the reason I asked about the tuning fork was, you know, typically a shin splint will hurt, you know, a little bit on the inside usually. And you said it's right at the apex. You always worry about a stress fracture. So just making sure you don't have a stress fracture. If you're not getting better, you may want to have it looked at.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. If I'm under 7 days and it's not getting better, I'll have it looked at. Thank you very much for your attention.
Good luck.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, David. And Bethany in West Bend, it's your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, good afternoon, Larry, and thank you, Lori and Bill. It's wonderful to have this show, and this is the first time I've listened, but my sister Annette in Iowa said she listens all the time and recommended that I listen and call in. So I have a hip issue. It's in kind of the groin area, and then the pain and discomfort kind of winds around to the back to my sacroiliac joint. And I think that it resulted from a fall on ice a couple winters ago. And I'm a very active runner, biker, swimmer, triathlete, but not in a high competitive level at this point in my life, because I'm 55, but really like to do all sorts of activities. My question is, I am getting physical therapy on it. It seems that the range of motion activity that they've been doing has been helping, but I still have this persistent sharp pain right in the front, in the kind of the deep groin area, when I step down at certain angles. And so going upstairs with my right leg is challenging, as well as running more than a couple miles.
All right. It sounds like, has that gotten any better since you started the physical therapy, that particular pain?
Not really. No. An x-ray was taken by my internist, and it shows in the hip that I do have some arthritis in the hip area.
Okay.
I haven't had an MRI as of yet. I'm wondering if I should go to that level or just continue to do the strengthening and stretching that I've been doing that has been helping.
Okay. Well, a couple things. It sounds like they're working on some good areas. If they have not looked at your back, if all the focus has been at the hip and nothing related to the back, I know you mentioned it starts in the front, wraps around to the back, but sometimes there can be an issue in the back that's associated with that. And so if they haven't examined your back and the joints of your pelvis, especially considering the fall you have, there may be something there that is not allowing the sharper pain to resolve. If they've done that, or if they do that and don't find anything that's relevant, they can't provoke your sharp pain from your back, You know, and you don't get better after a few more weeks than maybe an MRI. I mean, we had earlier callers about labrum, you know, at the shoulder or the hip. There could be a labral issue that could go along with the symptoms that you describe. But I'd make sure that the joints of your pelvis and that lumbar spine in particular have been looked at and rehabbed and see if that makes a difference for you.
Okay, what does really help, I take ibuprofen 800 milligrams in the morning and at night, and that relieves the pain and probably some of the inflammation as well.
Yeah.
Without that, though, the discomfort is quite elevated.
Yeah, well, and the sharp pain is concerning. Sharp pain is not a pain you want to work with, and non-steroidals, it doesn't cure the cause of pain like that typically. And so I would you know, keep doing what you're doing. But are you scheduled to see the physical therapist again?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I was wondering what specific I should perhaps ask.
Well, just ask if they've examined the joints of your pelvis. That would be your pubic symphysis, your sacroiliac joint, and your lumbar spine as a potential source of your pain. As well as a contributing factor to why this sharp pain is not resolving.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That's very helpful. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, right. Beth. Thank you very much for calling. I want to give Claire and Baraboo a chance to join us. Claire, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Ray. I'm such a fan.
Yeah.
Just a little background first. Broke my right foot in 1996. I finally got diagnosed with RSV, which I'm sure you're physical therapist.
We're actually having a lot of trouble hearing you, Claire. Are you too far from the phone or too close?
How about now?
Oh, much better.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I was walking a little bit, so I must have hit a bad signal area. Sorry, Lou. Okay, I broke my right foot in 1996, mid-shaft metatarsal. And I was finally diagnosed with RSV in 2000. And I'm still having chronic pain from that. But my question is this. I've been having problems with swelling in both of my legs, especially the lower extremities. And all the typical reasons for that have been eliminated. I've been gone through a lot of tests. And I'm wondering, is there some kind of exercise I can help with my circulation that would not be weight bearing too much for my right foot, which easily gets pained?
Okay.
Our RSD is short for reflex sympathetic dystrophy.
Okay.
And the newer terminology is CRPS, chronic regional pain syndrome. And what happens is it can result from any kind of injury, and we typically see it in feet, ankles, hands. Tends to be more of an extremity issue, and the injury, primary injury itself resolves, but in the process, the nerves start getting these mixed signals from the spinal cord, and they develop excruciating pain. Characterized by tenderness to touch, like if it's a foot, they have a hard time wearing a sock or a shoe. They can't stand to have the sheets touch it at night. They'll often get redness, swelling, changes in their nails. Eventually,
boy,
they'll get osteopenia, where the bones become osteopenic in the area. They'll get swelling. So the swelling in her legs, as she said, it's been most of the common causes have been eliminated. So one would think that it's left from the CRPS, and it's usually treated with a variety of physical therapy, injections, and some spinal cord, some sympathetic blocks in the spinal cord to try to block those nerves that are sending those aberrant signals to the foot. In any case, in Claire's case, my first suggestion would be a pool, some warm water pool therapy where she can get in the deeper water where she's non-weight bearing or limited weight bearing, and the hydrostatic pressure of the water will help with the swelling in her ankles. And research has shown that if you're immersed to your neck, the amount of compression due to hydrostatic pressure is actually greater than that of an ACE bandage. So if you can get in the water, it really helps. And then you can do some range of motion, moving the foot and ankle to help pump some of the fluid out. So that would be my first recommendation.
Okay.
You know, thereafter, you're sort of limited with things like elevation, active exercises, using the muscles, you know, ankle pumping in and out, figure eights, et cetera, to try to help move the fluid, as well as contrast baths, where you go in a warm bath for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, and then an ice bath for a minute, where that acts as, again, a vascular pump to pump extra fluid out. The problem is that happens in a dependent position, which isn't so great. So so those would be the typical approaches.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Sharon and Delavan next. Sharon, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I have a minor problem, but it's a big problem. I injured my great right toe about a month ago. I missed the bottom three steps, fell forward, landed on my hands and knees, and I really don't know what I did to that toe, but it's still twice the size, very painful. I can't bend it all the way, and I'm leaving for a trip for Europe in 2 weeks, and I'm wondering, I know they usually don't do much with a big toe, but wondering what I could be doing.
Yeah, well, Sharon, have you gone in to see a doctor, x-rays,
no,
anything like that?
No, I'm a nurse, and I volunteer at a hospital, and they said, oh, you know. Well, and the nurses said, well, we don't really do anything, you know. So, but it's very painful.
I tell you, the big toe is a big deal. Your little toe, they would just tell you to tape it to the next one. But your big toe, I would go in and I would see somebody, probably need x-rays. Okay. A couple things. I don't know, potentially you could have a fracture. But big toe range of motion is critical for walking, much less doing anything besides walking.
Right.
And
I can't bend it. It's just
after 3 weeks. If it was a sprain.
The first two toes I really can't bend.
Okay. All right. You know, even if you weren't going to Europe in a couple of weeks, I'd tell you to go in quickly, get this checked. But especially since you're going on this trip, I'd get in as soon as you can and have them look at it and probably take some imaging.
You're probably, gosh.
Well, I mean, Bill's right. The big toe is very different from any of the other toes. Any of the other toes are broken, you're right. You just buddy tape it to the next toe. But your big toe is really critical for balance. It's very important for when you walk. When you walk, you end up rolling off the end of your big toe. So you need good mobility and the ability to bend that first joint there so you can walk normally and balance on uneven surfaces. It's treated differently than the other toes.
Where my big toe joins in, it's getting so swollen on the top of my foot, too.
It's going to be an issue with shoes.
Yes, it is.
Well,
I will go in.
Yeah, go in.
Okay, good. Yeah, do yourself a favor and go in.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Well, isn't it, you know, here's the medical person who could.
That's right.
Sometimes
that's right.
We
the shoemaker's
own worst
children,
enemies. We'll put up with things and delay things. And
Well, here's a good one for you. Bob in Minocqua writes and says, I'm a 75-year-old runner and golfer. And thanks to the good advice I have gotten from Lori and Bill through the years, I can still run and walk 18 holes. He can still run, and I can still walk 18 holes on the golf course.
Way to go, Bob.
Yeah, we like testimonials like that.
Exactly.
Thank you, Bob.
Exactly.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and he's got that, you know, that drive to keep going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That makes a big difference. I mean, my dad's 82, and he still golfs. He was in the hospital a couple of weeks ago. And they let him out on Wednesday, and Thursday he was golfing. So
good for him.
Keep that activity going.
That's
I've got that in mind for tomorrow. Actually, hopefully, maybe tomorrow afternoon later on a little golf. And you guys are back on Monday, September 15th.
Okay,
we are.
Look forward to it.
Yep.
Well, look forward to it
before my mother's 80th birthday.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests. They'll be back on the 15th of September. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.